Ariel Helwani's MMA show is presented by Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
Hello, friends. It's your old pal, Ariel Helwani. I hope you're doing well. I hope you are healthy and staying as positive as possible during these times. Before we begin today's show, and let me tell you, it's a great one. I get a chance to catch up with my old pal, John Pollock, one of my best friends in this business. He is, of course, from postwrestling.com. We have a great conversation coming up. Plus, we'll hear from TST as well. So stay right there. But I just wanted to tell you about something that's very important. We're all looking for a bit of a distraction these days, right? It's a little overwhelming listening to the news, reading all this stuff. Guess what? Here at ESPN, we got a ton of distractions for you. We got a lot of podcasts that have nothing to do with what's going on in the world right now. So I suggest you check out podcasts like Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney, South Beach Sessions with the great Dan Le Batard. What about Cheap Heat with the man himself, Peter Rosenberg, and a hell of a lot more. We got a lot of great options, so be sure to check them out wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, be sure to give our show, The Helwani Show, aka Ariel Helwani's MMA Show, a review to tell us what you like to hear about over the coming weeks and whatever else is on your mind these days. All right? Enjoy the show. I love you all. On this Wednesday, March 25th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well. Another edition of the Wednesday pod here from my home, week two from my home. So I apologize in advance if the audio is a little different than what you're used to. Usually I'm in a nice studio in New York City at our South Street Seaport Studios, and we're using a high-tech setup, but I'm actually working on my setup, so I suspect that over time, if we are in this for the long haul, it will get better. But I appreciate everyone who continues to download and listen to all our stuff, not only here, but on YouTube, and of course, on the Instagram Lives that we've been doing, also on ESPN Plus with Chael. We got a lot to discuss today, and I'm really excited about today's show. Because obviously on all the different platforms that we're doing things and trying to keep you occupied and perhaps a little bit distracted from what's going on in the real world, I want to try to do more of that because I think there's a lot of places right now where you can, you know, learn about what's going on in the real world, and it's all very important, but I do think it's important to give you guys an escape as well and something to get your mind off of things. So we'll be blending what's going on in the real world and what's going on in the sports world today on the program, because I think that what is happening in the world of professional wrestling is fascinating for us in the mixed martial arts world, and there's some lessons that can be learned. And I just think that if you're curious about how people are trying to proceed in this new normal, at least for now, this is a fascinating story to talk about. So with that in mind, it is a pleasure to say hello once again to my old pal coming at us from the 6, the 416 to be exact, the great John Pollock of Post Wrestling, formerly of Live Audio Wrestling, The Fight Network. If you've been listening to our shows and watching our shows all these years, you know who John Pollock is. He doesn't need an introduction, but he is a phenomenal combat sports journalist and these days certainly focuses on pro wrestling. His website, postwrestling.com, with the likes of Wei Ting and many others. So I wanted to pick his brain about what's going on over there and perhaps compare it to what's going on in our little world of mixed martial arts. So without further ado, let us say hello to John Pollock. John, how are you?
Ariel, it is great to speak with you. Thank you a lot for having me on, and looking forward to chatting with you. It's a lot more time to speak, so I always appreciate the invite.
Yes, and first things first, I feel compelled anytime I talk to someone right now. How are you guys doing? How's your family? How are you guys coping with this situation?
I mean, it's certainly been felt. It's been a big adjustment. Myself and my wife are both working from home. We also have a 2-year-old son. So this week it's kind of been, you know, we have not been having our parents like that have typically been coming in and helping to watch him. It's been the two of us, which has actually worked out really well. I think that as you go through any kind of changes to your routine, we're very much creatures of habit, and then you establish kind of your new habits and just get acclimated to the differences. But yeah, certainly there's the concern just about your parents, other people. I have a sister who's a police officer, so she's obviously kind of front and center out dealing with a lot of issues and such. But I mean, overall, I can't complain too much about myself personally. I'm still able to work. But it's definitely a complete change. Just if I go out once a day for a walk and just seeing the city around me, it feels like you're in a movie.
Wow. Yeah, of course. I'm in the suburbs, but I've seen the photos, the videos of the major metropolitan cities across North America, and it does feel like a movie. It's very surreal. I had no idea that your sister was a police officer. That's incredible. So you and New York Rick have something in common. His wife is a police officer. Your sister's a police officer. But I thought that that was very interesting. I had no idea. Now, it's also interesting because for you, like for most sports journalists, the action has stopped. There's nothing to talk about. But for you, you guys haven't stopped. Like, yes, the events are happening in empty arenas, WWE events, AEW events, of note, but like nothing has really stopped. I would imagine you're just as busy, if not busier than usual, right? As a journalist.
It's the oddest thing that, you know, you can't help but be so consumed by what is going on in the world right now. We're inundated with so much information, and I have just gone through spurts where I'm just diving in and reading and listening to as much as I can, and then also trying to take a break from it. But you look at, and maybe your timeline is similar, that you almost see like two different worlds, that there is everything else is shut down, but here this little alcove of sports that we cover are proceeding, or at least attempting to proceed in the case of the UFC. But WWE, All Elite Wrestling, like they are moving forward. There's some companies in Japan who were hit with this a lot earlier. And that's a point I brought up before, is that fans that have been following the Japanese wrestling scene, I think kind of had an understanding a few weeks earlier of just how serious this was, because New Japan had stopped running shows after February 26th. Their whole lineup for March, which included a major tournament, was shelved. So you could already see the effects on that part of the world. And now fast forward a couple of weeks, we're experiencing it firsthand. But yeah, it's certainly an interesting debate of, should these companies be going forward with these empty arena shows versus the urgent messaging that seems to be amplifying at the moment about everyone needing to stay at home? And that, as extreme as these measures are, it sounds like the prevailing thought is this is not enough. This needs to be even more so, that we have to be isolating.
So how do you feel when you watch these events, even though they're in empty arenas? You're still seeing, you know, guys interact with each other, touch each other, wrestle with each other, be physical. I'll admit, when I watched that Brasilia UFC card, it felt weird, not only because it was in an empty arena, but because like we're being told to keep away from everyone. And now you have people very much getting physical with each other. When you're watching these events continue to go on, does it feel weird to you?
Very much so. I've been very uncomfortable and kind of vocal about that watching these shows. I do understand that there is a segment that is looking for entertainment right now, that these companies are providing that at a time when, you know, people have a lot of time on their hands. I do get that. I just don't place it as the number one priority. I'm looking out for these performers as well. And it's not just that they are putting themselves potentially at some level of risk. You know, there was a clinical care physician here in Toronto that we had on our show, and he described it to me that, you know, it's probably low to medium risk what these wrestlers are going through, but, you know, increases that to like around a medium risk when you take into account that some of these talents, they're flying. They're not Florida based. So they're traveling, and then what risk they could potentially be bringing to others as well. And you're just watching this, like, this is a very physical form of entertainment that we're watching. And when you look at all of these other sports leagues that are just going the cautious route and not even entertaining this, and I think it has to bring about some level of questioning of, is this the right decision to be making at the moment going forward? And it's been pro wrestling and, to a lesser extent, mixed martial arts that seem to have been at the forefront of pressing through this pandemic.
Yeah, which is totally bizarre when you consider what they actually do when they are competing. To the best of your knowledge, or has anyone said this publicly, that they don't feel comfortable? Any big names, any performers, big or small, talk to you, said anything on social media, said anything in an interview where they're like, this should probably stop for now?
Well, there have been some. And like from every, you know, sense that I have, is that in both WWE and AEW, this has not been... These are mandatory. It's, if you're not comfortable, you do not have to come to these shows. And that has been a consistent message that I've heard. Privately, I've spoken to people. Publicly, there's a wrestler in WWE named Leo Rush who, you know, spoke about not being comfortable doing these shows. And I have to imagine that, that is probably widespread. We're seeing, you know, it seems like they are very much trying to keep this to a minimum of the essential personnel to put these shows forward. So I'm sort of at the point now, because I've talked about it a lot and have received a lot of pushback from people for my opinion of this, but it is how I feel, that if these shows are going forward, which they have decided to do, the best you can hope for is that they're mitigating risk. But at the conclusion, like, I'm not in support of these shows going forward. I just think there's too many questions at the moment that it is not worth the risk at this moment. And it's something that everyone is feeling the effects of at this moment. There isn't any perfect answer that they can just stop these shows and there isn't some kind of damage to these companies financially. It's like everybody is going through that at the moment, because as a collective, we're looking at wrapping our arms around this virus to contain it and hopefully it mitigate the effects that it's going to have and end this.
I would imagine, much like the UFC, these guys aren't just getting like a blanket test, or like they're not just blanket testing everyone on the roster just for the sake of testing them. They're probably going to test them if they show symptoms, right? This is not like the NBA where every WWE performer has been tested.
I believe it's a case where they are monitoring their temperature, but I don't know what above and beyond they have at their disposal. Like that's the other problem, is that, you know, it's not like there is some gigantic access to testing of COVID-19. Like these tests are very much for the people that are in most need of them, and professional wrestlers that are wrestling several times a week are not going to be priorities to be dispersing these tests for. And as well, like we're learning about like asymptomatic spread. So that's where someone might not be displaying those symptoms that could be going on and competing, and it's not for several days before they could develop those symptoms. So, again, it's just, to me, there is, to me, any level of risk at this point, I think it's a real gamble. And one person that ends up with the virus, that really shuts down everything at that point.
And by the way, has WWE come out and said why they are just going ahead with things? And we'll get to WrestleMania, the big one, in a second. But have they actually like put out a statement as to their line of thinking here?
Not so much. No, it's just they have decided to go through with the shows. I mean, they are not even saying the terms coronavirus or COVID-19 on their broadcast. The most that they have even alluded to what's going on is that we are in an empty arena due to the dire circumstances in the world. And that's, you know, pretty much the only acknowledgement. Like they very much are viewing themselves like we are escapist entertainment at this point that we're providing for people. And you have to look at, you know, the big question, and this goes beyond just WWE to all sports leagues right now, is, you know, so much of their business is centered around television rights and providing content for these networks. I mean, how much of that plays into the equation for WWE to move forward with this, which is a completely different question about WrestleMania as well, which will just be on their streaming service as well coming up.
Yeah. So as far as these shows are concerned, just to be clear, are they live right now or are they taped?
They have been live up until this point, but this week they were getting ahead and just doing multiple days in a row of taping. So at this point, they have taped next week's episodes of Raw and SmackDown. They've taped the next two episodes of SmackDown. So all the programming leading into WrestleMania, and they'll also have the night after WrestleMania, that episode of Raw taped, in addition to WrestleMania that they are taping today, this being Wednesday and Thursday.
Wait, they're taping WrestleMania today?
They're taping it today and Thursday.
Come on, really? Wow. So WrestleMania will not be live?
No. They're taping it in advance because it is a risk that a week from this coming weekend, what are potential travel restrictions going to be at? What if, like, there's a lot of questions. To me, if you're going to do this, the best way is to just bulk tape and get yourself as far ahead as you can, because there may not be the option to even get everyone. In Orange County in Florida, they have just issued a stay at home provision for people as well. I don't know if that would necessarily affect WWE taping, but I think you're really leaving it to chance if you were to try and run this live that weekend.
Wow, that is fascinating. Now, as a journalist, you are now being faced with the toughest test of your career. What happens if you get your hands on WrestleMania spoilers? Do you report them or do you not?
We've discussed this. I think we would report them and label them as such and leave it to the reader if they want to read them. It is worth noting that as we're speaking today, like they have done a lot of tapings and nothing has gotten out. It's like essential personnel. It's a small number, that's in there. And, you know, I'm sure over the years, Ariel, like you would hear certain things out of Ultimate Fighter, but I mean, it wasn't really prevalent that you would come out of a season of the Ultimate Fighter knowing a whole lot. So I'm thinking that's kind of what I'm expecting now. I don't know if they'll come out or not, but granted, it's, you know, over a week until the show airs. And are they even taking precautions like filming two separate finishes for matches just for that very provision? I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but I would not put it past them to do that just to ensure that as small a circle as possible are aware of these results. I've never been someone that look at like spoilers do not matter to me at all. So, but I definitely know of the larger public that it is certainly something that they go to great cost to avoid.
Now, is it true that it's going to be taped like all over the place, like in different places outside of the Performance Center, or is it just going to be at their Performance Center, which is like the UFC apex that we have in MMA?
Yeah, I think the bulk of it will be done at the Performance Center, but they have mentioned that there will be multiple locations. Like they are advertising now, AJ Styles and The Undertaker in, I know this is going to reel you in, Ariel, a yes. Boneyard match. So you would assume that will be on set somewhere in Florida, that they would be like, that sounds like something outside of the Performance Center, and probably some other ideas too. Maybe you want to take your 24/7 championship and go to various spots. Because again, like you want to keep the numbers under that roof to, you know, under 50, which is the CDC advisement of, you know, you take a crew and go film elsewhere. And then that's several less bodies that have to be under one roof when time is ticking to get all of this stuff filmed.
Any truth to the rumor, DC, Daniel Cormier, seems to think that we forced the WWE to change their practices. Because on Monday on our program, we talked about how it was weird that they were showing the empty seats and they weren't kind of, you know, blocking it out a different way or at least dimming the lights. And then he called me very excited yesterday afternoon and showed me that the camera angle on Raw was towards the ramp and less of the seats, and he thinks that someone at WWE was listening to us and changed the way they shot the show. Do you think this is true?
Well, I think it's interesting that because last week, like All Elite Wrestling is also running these empty arena shows in Jacksonville. They'll be doing a show tonight, and last week was their first attempt at this, and it's been interesting to look at the two companies, how they have presented these shows. And AEW did the same kind of hard cam adjustment where it's not facing the seats, but rather facing the entrance. And I think everybody would agree the AEW presentation was superior last week. SmackDown was back to WWE's normal way of shooting things, and it felt extremely awkward the first time. I think by last week's SmackDown, you do notice a difference. I thought Monday they finally rectified things. I don't know what ultimately led to that decision. So if you and DC want to take credit for this, I think you would be welcome to do it.
Okay. We'll take credit for it.
Maybe Paul Levesque called you. Maybe Paul Levesque like dialed up Daniel Cormier, or because I'm sure he's a listener of yours and maybe wanted to get some insight from
Paul. Yes, he loves us. By the way, why are they doing it for like a two-night thing? Why are they doing that? Is it just because they're trying to stretch it out, more content, make it seem like a more special thing? Any particular reason for that?
I did not hear like the specific reasoning for it. It certainly felt like it was a last-minute decision, because I heard from people that, you know, whether it be talent or people like working on the shows, like some of who found out about this on Twitter. So it was a very last minute decision. And this came out last Wednesday. The NXT program that aired that night, they were still referring to WrestleMania as one night on that broadcast Wednesday night. So it was certainly a decision that seemed to have just been made very quickly. I think that the idea is, you know, WrestleMania has grown into, it's a marathon show at this point. Like you're looking at upwards of 6+ hours that inside that Performance Center, I think that's a big ask of your audience to be able to capture their attention in that style of environment for that long a period. They're struggling on just their television show on Raw. They have leaned heavily on classic footage. They re-aired a Royal Rumble last week, for instance. And I think that's just to break up the very cavernous environment that the Performance Center, with no people in it, is going to leave. And I couldn't imagine people sitting down for an entire lengthy WrestleMania in one sitting. So maybe the best idea, break it up and make these more digestible 3-hour shows spread out over 2 nights.
How do you feel about Rob Gronkowski's role in all of this? What is he? He's like the host of it all or something. That entrance last week that I saw online was very wacky. It just seemed really weird.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. It's just like, you look at everything, they are so adamant to run WrestleMania, and it's one that, like, you have all these programs in place and they were all set to peak for this weekend of WrestleMania. I do understand that, but I mean, even comparing it to the UFC, this is not an era where, you know, so much of your revenue is on pay-per-view. It's on your streaming service that I think in this time period, I don't think wrestling fans are dropping the WWE Network right now. If anything, I think they're spending more hours maybe watching it. And they've also opened up a portion of it to just give to people for free. It's not like this event is going to be on pay-per-view where we're going to make so much money off pay-per-view for this event. It's not as though this is a commitment to Fox or the USA Network to provide this content as part of your television rights deals. And to me, it's the short-term pinch that you'll take from not going ahead with this event is more than made up for when things, whatever normal is at some period in the future, you have this enormous event that is a gigantic brand and can be utilized as something that when the economy is going to be in shambles in the after effects of this. And to bring a WrestleMania to a market like Tampa, for instance, I think like you're going to see a lot of people look at WWE as this giant event that is going to provide like a stimulus for that local economy and might be giving a lot of fans the reason to feel safe about traveling and all the money it brings to that host city. I just think there's a greater utilization of WrestleMania than simply we have to go through with this show and it has to happen in this kind of setting that I don't think anybody is really wanting to see this event presented as.
Yeah. Are you surprised they're not just like waiting till July and just do it then?
I feel they are in this position where WWE is not going to shut themselves down and it's just going to be business as usual. Like as long as we can continue, the show must go on. That's going to be the mentality. And they're going to have to address this after WrestleMania as well. Like after that last taped Raw airs, are we going right back to empty arena shows on that Friday for SmackDown? Like what is the long-term plan? Are we just going to continue and just not shut down until we are told you cannot fly or you cannot run these shows? Because that feels like is what it's going to take for them to stop at this point. So like, I think at this point, it's just, listen, let's bite the bullet and we wait until we can present this. And it will be a gigantic event, perhaps even more so because you'll have fans that are starved for this, that have waited for this. The flip side is there may be a lot of hesitation for large gatherings. Like there's so many unknowns to this entire thing at this point, but I feel like the common denominator that we don't talk about enough in all of this between, and this certainly applies to mixed martial arts, is that we are talking about performers going ahead in this climate that are not unionized, that are not part of any kind of association. And if every sports league had this same mentality of providing escapist entertainment, I don't think that's an argument that even gets tabled by the Players Association that would put their clients in this kind of position right now to be getting on airplanes or doing empty arena games at this point.
Yeah, no, that is a fascinating angle, one that we brought up as well. It's just they're playing by different rules and perhaps that's the common denominator, right, between the different organizations that are putting on events right now, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Again, for another year at WrestleMania, we have a former UFC fighter on a big stage, big platform with a lot of eyes on them. This year, it's Shayna Baszler, right? For those that haven't been following Shayna, the Queen of Spades, who is a former UFC fighter, of course, and has fought Elite XC, Strikeforce, is a women's MMA pioneer in many respects, How is she doing? Because it seems like she's really taken to this very well. Not surprising to those who followed her career, but how is she doing from your perspective?
She's been doing very well. I think that they have done a really great job with her in NXT, presenting her very much as like the bully of the women's division in NXT. She has an aura about her and style that is, she is unlike anyone else on that women's roster in NXT. She's been protected very well. Her, like, they don't lean on any weaknesses. They don't have her go out there and talk for 15 minutes. But when she does speak, like, it's very concise. It's very deliberate. And like, her style is also a very unique style for the setting that she's in. So now she is making the leap up to Raw at this point. And I guess the jury will be out, but certainly you can look at where they have positioned her at this point. I mean, running through everyone to set her up for the match with Becky Lynch and now in a really prominent match at WrestleMania, which, I mean, I'm sure you saw this immediately when we were at that AIW show back in September of 2016, watching
That's right. A
very young Shayna Baszler, along with Matt Riddle on that card.
That's right. Yes, in Cleveland prior to UFC 203, the highly anticipated debut of one CM Punk in the UFC. So wait, has she not lost yet?
She has lost in NXT, not up on on the main roster. So, I mean, they've not like in a singles capacity at this point.
Good. So the complete opposite of Cain Velasquez. What the heck happened to Cain Velasquez? He debuted, lost, and then he hasn't been heard from again?
I don't really understand why they, it just seemed like they had no plan for Kane, and the introduction with that Brock Lesnar match, you could not have ended his first match with a more flat ending that left no demand for any follow up with Kane Velasquez. Like, to me, you have to hit the hard reset and have a really creative way to reintroduce him, because that was a absolute failure to introduce him in the way that they did and then have him lose without controversy to Brock Lesnar. Like, that was your big money match that was given away. And I don't think there's much, you would have to work overtime to build up people's anticipation to want to see that again. I think they really blew it on their first try with Cain Velasquez, and not saying he can't be salvaged at this point, but it's going to take a lot of work. And I definitely question him thriving in that particular system.
Switching over to MMA, because of course you cover MMA as well. How do you feel about the UFC's insistence to forge on with 249? I spoke to a bunch of the fighters, who are at least now slated to compete on the card, saying like, yeah, we're training, but we don't know where to train. We're not being told where the fight is going to happen, but the UFC continues to ask about their passport info, their medical info, all that stuff and more. Everyone worries about Khabib Ferguson. It might take place international. So it just, sort of like you, when I watch it all, it feels a little uncomfortable because we're just completely ignoring what's going on behind us. And it seems like Dana White is taking this like a personal challenge to prove to everyone. And there's certainly a lot of similarities between Dana and Vince McMahon. How do you feel about the way that they're handling this situation?
I really sympathize with the fighters that are in an awful situation at this point where, you know, they have, for a lot of them, I mean, if they were scheduled for this 249 card, it's like they already have the sunk costs of putting together a training camp, and this is it's putting all the money in to get paid on the back end, which is the fight. That is what it represents for them, is that paycheck. And you know, they've got to have those questions swirling at this point. Like, if I don't fight, am I going to see any of my fight purse at this point, or am I just on standby till these fights eventually happen later this year, which I don't know, but I have bills to pay. So I have a lot of sympathy for the fighters in that sense. To Dana White, I think he has come off very poor in all of this. For whatever criticism you want to level at Vince McMahon for moving ahead with these shows, I think to his credit, his public profile at this juncture of his life is virtually non-existent, that he's not out there. Like, this to me feels like Dana White is in the role Vince McMahon was in 2001 when we saw him with Bob Costas and with the XFL fallout, where he was going out and just saying the most outlandish things that I just think came off really poorly to the public. That's where I feel Dana White is coming off now with some of the comments he's making. And yes, taking this as like these shows not happening, it's almost like he's internalizing it as like it's a mark against him as a promoter that he can't put these shows on, when instead I would be applauding those that would be exercising caution in all of this. And if I'm a fighter right now and I'm looking at the actions of a Dana White versus the actions of a Scott Coker, and who I would want to be, you know, making these big decisions at this time when health concern is at a premium, I think it's a very clear-cut case of who has come off much better in the handling of all this.
Oh, yeah, that has been discussed behind the scenes. Of course, the Bellator event got canceled the day of the London, Columbus, Portland events. You know, there was a little more time, but the Bellator fighters seem to be very happy. And Bellator actually got they really have capitalized. I don't want to say capitalized, but I don't know how they got handed this, or dealt this hand in particular, because they had a 2-month break scheduled just kind of
right
out of nowhere. They're going through a bit of a different period now, a transition, if you will, with the Viacom situation and Steven Espinosa. So I think that they were using this as a bit of a reset, but they don't have an event scheduled until May 9th, which is the longest that they've had as far as breaks are concerned for a very long time, a number of years, like dating back to the old, like, Bjorn Rebney season days. So they don't have to worry about anything now. They're going to have to make a decision relatively soon regarding that event, but they're not forced to scramble like the UFC or WWE has. So Bellator has been really lucky in all of this. And I think that's why they maybe haven't received the blowback. Like, if they had an event this weekend in Thackerville or Dublin or whatever, it might be a little different. So they got really lucky. They should be thanking their lucky stars. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. At times, some of the things that are being said feel very tone deaf and just unnecessary. And honestly, like a lot of the things that are happening outside of the sports world, I'm just choosing to ignore them because I find that they drive me crazy, and I'm not in the state. I don't want to let that negativity seep into my soul right now. It's just not the sort of thing that I think makes us, you know, try to be as positive and go forward in the best way
possible. Well, from people that, you know, people that you've spoken to, Ariel, like, I just can't imagine, like, if you're a fighter that is scheduled for a fight night card post 249, just how anxious you have to be, that you have to be, like, unlike professional wrestling, like, these guys have to be training for a fight and have to have the mindset that I am getting ready for a fight in a month's time or more, and monitoring my weight and not maybe even having access to a gym at this point. Like, I cannot imagine the frustration where they must be hitting up their management constantly for answers and there aren't any concrete ones right now.
Freaking out. Yeah, they're freaking out. I've heard from a bunch of fighters. What do you know? What do you know about 249? 249 fighters. What do you know? The Oklahoma City card. Just name a card. Everyone freaking out from the cards that were supposed to, you know, happen in Portland and Columbus. Am I getting paid in London? Am I getting paid? What do you know about the upcoming cards? How are they going to get me to this undisclosed location? I mean, they're asking me questions that I feel like they should be asking their management. Their management asking me questions. I'm asking the management as well. They don't seem to know the answers. There's also the case of, like, some of these management companies have people working for them. How are they going to pay them if they're not getting paid from fights? You know, one of the sort of unsung heroes in all of this that are helping the fighters are the sponsors, you know, because in this day and age, and I've said this before all this started, but the sponsors in MMA, at least, the landscape changed drastically over the last year or so. Like, it totally went down the toilet once Reebok came. But with the rise of social media and Instagram in particular, fighters were actually starting to make a lot of money. We remember, of course, Paige VanZant telling me late last year that she was making more money off Instagram than she was off fighting. I think some people took that the wrong way, but I think it goes to show that you could make money if you're smart about your social media and the way you present yourself via social media. So a lot of these sponsors, I reported two last week, Sanibel and Monster, that I spoke to, who are continuing to pay the fighters to do their thing on social media, even though they're not fighting. And I think that's very notable. Other than that, like, there's no other way for these guys to make money. And, you know, there's a lot of these fighters who are coaches. They do some training sessions, some privates. They have no way to make money. So there's so much that can happen, like the fallout from this. So nutritionists, coaches, trainers, none of these people are making money. And I know I'm speaking about something that's very small, like, in terms of the entire world. Every single business owner, every single employee is worrying about this right now. But it's just, it's fascinating to see it, you know, the way in which it is affecting our sport. Now, I want to just quickly switch gears because this has been on my mind for the last few days. And I wanted to talk to you about it because I know you just had a podcast that dropped earlier today with the great Jeff Marek, who I respect so much, who I think is a phenomenal talent. Now that what he's doing in the NHL world is really inspirational, how he transitioned over from live audio wrestling and being a wrestling journalist to now being one of the preeminent voices in hockey. You guys spoke about the Chris Benoit documentary that was released over the last few days, part one a few days ago, part two on Tuesday via Vice, the Dark Side of the Ring, season two which premiered with that two-part series on what happened to Chris Benoit. Just curious what you thought of the documentary. What were your impressions of it? Because I'm assuming you watched it.
Yeah, it was a really difficult documentary to get through. I mentioned it in my interview with Jeff, but when I got the screener for it, I kind of just put it aside. I was going to, well, I knew I had to watch it at some point. And then one night on a whim, I turned it on and Ariel, I got about 5-6 minutes in and I was not ready just to dive into this at this point. I had to put it off and then did sit down and watch the entire thing. It's heartbreaking to watch just from home videos involving Daniel Benoit, who was, 7 years old when he was killed that weekend in 2007, his wife Nancy as well, who are the victims in this entire thing. And I mean, they have most of all the key people involved, those that were close to Chris, that were David Benoit, who was a son of Chris's from a previous marriage. He's interviewed and comes across just, you feel so much sympathy for this individual who you have to imagine that here he was at such a young age being thrust as to the son of these heinous crimes that occurred in 2007 and having to live with that burden through no fault of his own. And to this day in the documentary calls Chris still his hero. It's a very heavy watch and kind of brought me back to that time when, I was covering that story in 2007 and it just completely captured, like, that was the summer of 2007. That's what I think of is Chris Benoit and having to go back and also with the different perspective now, I'm a father now and it just was that much harder to sit down and watch this thing. It's, as I said as well, was for the longest time we were asking the question of why. And no answer is ever going to give you any kind of reason for something like that occurring. At this point, I don't think you can even ask that question because you will never, I can't understand that happening, even with all the factors involved that are explored in the documentary.
You've been covering wrestling and combat sports longer than I have. Did you ever have any interactions with Benoit? Of course, he being Canadian, perhaps that would increase the chances, but did you ever interact with them at all?
Yes. So when I should backtrack here that, Live Audio Wrestling, which was the program I worked on, before I had started with the show, they actually helped run Chris Benoit's website. And that was at a time when I was trying to get in and do some work on the website for the law. And one of the roles I had was just sending out like this weekly, kind of newsletter update. It was like an email newsletter for chrisbenoit.com. So I was writing that each week while I was in high school. And I think the first time I met Chris was, coming in studio one time for the law when he was the in studio guest and, getting to meet him there. And then over the years, I interviewed him several times. So, I didn't have a relationship with Chris, but interacted him. I think the last time I spoke with him would have been either the summer of 2005 or 2006, I would say. Might have been 2005. So sporadically throughout my career interviewing him.
Yeah, man, I never had an opportunity to talk to him. I did meet Chris Jericho for the first time just a few months ago, and I think he comes off very well in the documentary, as does Chavo Guerrero, but I won't give away too much, and people probably know the story. If you don't, I highly recommend watching it, Dark Side of the Ring, about the rise and fall, if you want to call it that, of Chris Benoit, and also a lot on Eddie Guerrero and how that affected him. But the one journalist whose name is escaping me, perhaps you remember how he laid out that weekend where Chris committed the murders and then his own suicide. That to me was just, I mean, mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling.
It's extremely graphic. The journalist's name is Matthew Randazzo, who wrote this book around 2008 called Ring of Hell. And he was actually involved. They were in development to make a movie on Benoit, which eventually got shelved. But he was involved and knows pretty much all the details of, what is believed to have happened, that weekend, which is haunting, to hear, recapped in the second half of the documentary. It's not an easy watch. That would be if you're going into this cold, like this is certainly one that is going to be, pretty frightening if you don't know all the details.
Yeah. I will say there's a nice-ish ending. So at least you get to leave with some kind of good feeling, but I couldn't agree with you more.
On Monday, I told Cormier the story on how I found out about Benoit's death. At the time, we thought, you know, it was something not quite what it ended up being, and they cover that as well in the documentary. How did you find out about it?
I think I was at work at the Fight Network and just saw the update on the WWE website, and it was I just remember being stunned, and it's one of those moments where you just want to alert those that I think Mauro Ranallo was sitting like a foot away from me, and I had to reread it because I had to make sure, like, am I reading this right? This is just one of those, like, okay, slow down. What are you, like, digest this information. And from there, it just became like that week is a haze to me. Like, I remember that Mauro was extremely rocked by this. He had a connection with the Hart family and was just completely distraught over this news. And we did the show that the next day, which was a Fight Network Radio, that Ariel appeared on many times. And
yeah,
that was one day where Mauro just asked me to host it, and he was just going to sit there and chime in where possible because he just did not feel comfortable being relied on to host the entire hour. And we did have Jeff Merrick on that day. And that was just weeks of, you know, detail after detail coming out. And it was just a surreal summer, really. And then the just outcome of all of that and reliving that. That's essentially what went through in watching this.
And is the Jeff Merrick podcast, is it up right now?
Yes. If you go to postwrestling.com, the entire interview is there. You can subscribe to Post Wrestling on iTunes. It's there as well. Jeff was, you know, very close with Chris. So it was a lot of interesting insight and some stories that I was not aware of either. So I really appreciated Jeff, coming on to chat about it.
Yeah. I can't wait to listen to that. And, you know, it's fascinating because I was talking to someone at ESPN, who works in the esports department, and esports hasn't missed a beat. And I know you don't obviously cover esports, but you work for yourself and you've built this amazing business. And I think you've given a lot of independent journalists hope that they can do this on their own and make a living. And so you guys are the ones who are actually set up perfectly. Like, I've got a makeshift thing here and I'm trying to fix it each and every day. We weren't prepared for this sort of thing. The ones who work for, you know, the big bad companies. I love working for ESPN, but I don't usually do stuff from home. But for you, I feel like you guys are like 100 yards ahead of us all because you have a whole setup, right? Don't you have your setup in your house, or do you have to go somewhere for that?
So I do rent like a shared office space here in Toronto that I go and work with. So I'm not going there presently, but yeah, we like our studio is just out of like my basement that we just converted into a studio that we can use. And while usually, my partner Wei Ting, will be coming over once or twice a week, we're just doing everything remotely. But yeah, I mean, it hasn't affected us all that much. We're still doing all of our shows. I mean, with all of these companies still running, like, we're still doing them, and it's given me some more time to do other interviews and such. So, and we've got like a really great team of people on our site. It's more than just Wei and I. So I mean, we've been lucky in that sense. So that's why I feel guilty complaining about any kind of inconveniences that everybody is going through, much worse than myself.
I'm totally putting you on the spot here. And I apologize if you feel like I'm doing so, but I just saw something as we were talking about it, and I think you may know about this because I'm looking at like some timelines and it feels like it's at least a day or so old, but I'm seeing a headline that Vince McMahon is selling 15% of his WWE stock in a quote forward contract. This according to Deadline, and there's some other articles. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I don't know all of like the details about the strategy of it. I think it's more so that it's pretty much just a response to the financial windfall that they are going to have, that I think it's just making some of their cash more liquid.
Okay.
But again, I don't have all the specifics on it, but I think it's largely just a reaction that I'm certain many companies are now at the point where you're getting through kind of the immediacy of what this is going to have, and now looking at long-term effects that this is going to have. Like, I can't imagine at the larger level of, you know, the seasons that could be wiped out, like so many, like a year from now, how we will assess this. It's who knows what the effects are going to be, but I'm certain WWE, to their point, like, they have $500 million of cash on hand. So, I mean, they are better equipped than some to be able to withstand this period. I mean, the UFC just had that enormous dividend payout, which, I mean, the timing was not great, but who in the world could have imagined this? So it's, WWE is like in a better position, at least because of the, you know, of their resources, and those television contracts are just so, like, that is so huge for that company, because you take out those television deals, the company is in a different position.
Yeah. And actually, literally, as we were just talking about this, just saw this via Variety, and we're taping this at 3:06 p.m. Eastern time, but Variety just reported that Endeavor, the parent company of the UFC, has laid off 250 staffers across its portfolio of businesses. Wow. Sources told Variety there was a memo sent out by Endeavor CEO Ari Emanuel, one of the owners of the UFC. And this is a quote from Patrick Whitesell, this is a quote from Ari Emanuel, referencing Patrick Whitesell, who's the co-CEO of Endeavor. "We will be implementing a number of additional measures beginning this week and through April that will affect compensation in some jobs across the company. As part of this, Patrick and I will not be taking a salary for the remainder of 2020. Wow. How about that? We are going to be seeing a lot of this over the next few weeks and few months. Crazy that I was just asking you about that WWE connection. Now we see a UFC connection. So there's a lot of similarities between what's going on at World Wrestling Entertainment, at the UFC. Both are trying to forge on as best as possible, but they're obviously going to be hitting a lot of roadblocks and a lot of situations, struggles, as is the rest of the world. And that's one of the byproducts of what's going on across the world. John, this has been great, man. I could talk to you all day long, but I feel like you have a lot of work to do and you got a lot to catch up on. I feel bad when I take you away from your job for 45 minutes. But I will say, I did reach out to you via text, not via email like you did. So maybe I broke the code there.
I understood, like, when you have to lock someone down, I mean, maybe text is the way to go. I always like how you and I bond over our various neuroses. I think that's certainly a unifying trait that the two of us are bonded by.
Absolutely. And you could take it from me, text if you need an immediate reply, especially under these circumstances, just text someone, because the email could just fall into, like, my wife has like 10,000 unread emails. I don't know how she lives with that. That just gives me anxiety. I have 23 right now and I'm freaking out. So take it from me, and also take it from TST, who we're about to hear from in a second. From a minimalist perspective, you want to have less emails in your inbox, I would imagine. So you want to take away that clutter. And I understand, by the way, John, you're a big fan of TST. Yes. You've employed some of his actual tips into your life. Is that accurate?
I'm a big fan of the minimalist tip of the week, and I would really love to know his thoughts, that here we are in a time when, I mean, I feel like his philosophy is get away from the screen, get out, get away from being so reliant on technology. And now we are being isolated and forced to be in front of technology. I think that's what's getting people through their day-to-day isolation. So I wonder, is there a greater whole of minimalism presently, or has this just been something where we are being push towards everything that we should be limiting in our life? I mean, these are...
Well, John, do you have like 10 minutes? Do you want to experience the minimalist tip of the week live now?
I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but I would love to just sit back and take in TST's minimalist tip of the week.
Well, without further ado, it is time for...
TST's minimalist tip of the week.
John, welcome on. I'm glad to hear that you're a fan.
First time caller, long time listener.
Please answer that question, TST.
Yeah, to talk about what we were just saying. So minimalism is not really, I think it's not really built for this lifestyle. Obviously, many people's lives have been thrown off and their ways of life have been thrown off by this whole thing. No one can plan for these kinds of things. But what I am doing as a minimalist is just trying, as I always am, to focus on the absolutely necessary parts of life. And so for me, I am constantly identifying my values and beliefs, what I want to do, what I want to get better at, and just trying not to stray from my normal day to day. Yes, I am working at home. I'm not in the office. No, I cannot go to the gym. No, I cannot get out to dinner, but I'm just trying to make my life as normal as possible and cut out all the unnecessary. I am watching more things than I once did. You know, I was watching some of these legendary UFC fights this past weekend, but I have a rule. As all minimalists, we live by set rules. I do not watch TV on a night in which I work the next day. So I'm only watching TV on a weekend. However, I'm not watching it on screenless Saturday. So it's really only reserved to like one or two nights a week that I'm allowed to watch things. And of course, I'm still upholding Screenless Saturday. I still do my Screenless Saturday breakfast with my friends, although it is now via FaceTime maybe. So I'm just still trying to, it does make it difficult, but trying to live as minimalistically as possible.
Yeah. It's, wow. It's, I had no idea. Go ahead, John.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, it's been interesting. Like, my wife, for instance, like the other night, she got on like this video group chat with all her friends just to like catch up. And it, in some ways, it's like everyone is kind of going through this at the moment. And it's interesting to see like what ways of technology are keeping people together. Like I'm on like my WhatsApp chat with a lot of my friends where we're just checking in with one another. And like there is obviously like so much, you know, awful things going on at the moment, but I think it's also leaving people to, you know, have extra time and how you dedicate that extra time to connect with others.
It's funny you say that you're using technology in all these creative ways because a lot of people are. I wrote a letter. I mailed a letter to my friend the other day.
I got it this morning.
A pen pal.
I just had no idea, by the way, that Troy had, or TST, excuse me, I just broke the fourth wall, had this this rule in his life that he can't watch TV on a work night. Like my kids don't even follow that kind
intense.
Of rule.
This,
that is very intense.
That is not always the rule. Like when life is normal, sometimes I'll watch Jeopardy. Aside from that, that's about the only thing. Other times, you know, under these circumstances, I have to set rules because obviously it's so easy to fall into the trap of, oh, my TV's right here. Why go do something when I can just be in here? So even though we are under lockdown, especially in Connecticut, I'm still going out and I'm still walking like a bunch, like 3-4 times a day, just getting out of the house and doing exercise, like going for runs, doing all those things and not, you know, cooping myself up at all times because I live in a very small space and I would go absolutely insane if I were literally here 24/7.
And by the way, I just feel compelled to ask you, I didn't want to ask you this beforehand, but I did wake up today at around 6 a.m. I'm still waking up at the normal time for some reason, like I have to get my kids to school, but I don't. And I couldn't help but notice a tweet from TST who so boldly proclaimed just a few weeks back that he had deleted Twitter. He wrote a very nice short story, if you will, on his website, but he did send out a tweet promoting said short story. And so I'm wondering, why are you back on Twitter, Troy?
So I am back on Twitter under these circumstances, kind of like what John was saying, just to be more connected with the world. Me, because obviously, you know, I prioritize connecting with people, you know, face to face and doing that whenever I can. But obviously that option has been taken away from me. So I think right now we need to be connected with humans more so than ever. And now that the purest form of human communication and interaction has been taken away from me, I need more and I need to substitute it with something. And social media is a way to do that. And I'm still, I'm still not on it all the time. You know, I go on Instagram like once a day. I go on Twitter like once a day. So I'm definitely curtailing my use. But yes, I am back. The account did not get deleted. And I just want to be able to check in on you, you know, because we got MMA news. I want to see what you're up to and keep in the loop on other things as well.
Well, that's one of the positive byproducts, I would say, that has come out of this horrible time. Okay, without further ado, John doesn't have all day here, TST. What's your pick of the week?
All right, so this week. So obviously, because of everything that is happening, I know a lot of people are in some very tough situations, especially financially. And this is where budgeting comes into play here. Budgeting is key for minimalists, and this is key for all people and relates to minimalism because minimalism at its core is about eliminating the unnecessary to make room for what is necessary. And when I mean that in a financial sense, I mean, obviously you have to make sure that all your bases are covered, whether, you know, that is your rent and that is your groceries and all the other essentials that you have. And obviously our disposable incomes right now are more strapped because we're working less hours or some people are unfortunately getting laid off. So it is very important to live by a budget. And what I do for my budget is, again, I would like to talk about another, you know, website or app that is out there. It's called the Every Dollar app. It is a little green icon. I use it every month. I set my budget in the first of every month. And basically, it prioritizes everything. It has like all these different categories. And the first category it gives you is contributions, your contributions to the world, whether that is donations to charities or organizations. And obviously there's a lot of great ones out there that you can donate to right now that will get the money that you donate to the right places. So it goes contributions, and then it goes your emergency fund, so your savings, and then it goes to your rent. So it prioritizes contribution and giving first, which is what I love, and then the other essentials, and then it goes down the line to food, to transportation, and then you can create your own categories. So what on whatever other areas that you spend in life that one other person may not. So basically what you do is you say, okay, I'm going to allocate X amount of dollars to this category for this month based on how much money I'll be bringing in this month. And then as you spend in that category, you just, hey, I spent $10 in the food and drink category today. Mark it down, and then it takes $10 away from your overall total, et cetera, et cetera. So every purchase that I make throughout the month, I log it immediately in the Every Dollar app. And so I watch my Every Dollar app like a hawk to make sure that I do not go over my budget, and I never do, and I love it.
John, your thoughts after experiencing that for the first time in person, or at least
lived
live?
Up to the hype live, I've got to say. Wow. I'm taking notes as we speak.
Well done, TST. Well done. Last thing, very, very last thing. John, on the spot.
Yes.
The people need something to do. Give me an MMA fight, underrated MMA fight that you love that people need to watch, and an underrated pro wrestling match that you love that people need to watch to get their mind off of things. What do you got? What do you got on the spot?
Okay. Off the top of my head, I'm going with yes. UFC 35. All the way back in January of 2002, okay? Jens Pulver versus BJ Penn. This was when BJ Penn got this title fight, and everyone thought Jens Pulver is being led to slaughter. And I just remember the anticipation, day to day. I was so excited. I was a fan at the time. So excited for that fight, and watching Jens Pulver's performance that night. To me, it was one of my earliest favorite fights that I had in mixed martial arts history. So a way back fight from 2002. Professional wrestling. I would say to go back. I guess I can't pick anything from the Great American Bash from 1989 because that was recently covered on Monday by yes. Daniel Cormier. So sticking with that, boy, why not you go for a man? I feel like I have a lot of pressure here, Ariel.
Right now?
No,
please
I'm not
don't say stumped. Something in the last 2 months like DC did. Zhang Weili, Yoani, and Jay Check. I mean, are you kidding me?
Okay, let's keep it simple. It's free right now on the WWE Network. They have unlocked all of their WrestleMania events. Let us go back and relive WrestleMania 7. Randy Savage versus the Ultimate Warrior. I choose that because if you haven't seen this match, you're probably saying to yourself, an Ultimate Warrior match. And that's exactly why I'm selecting this particular match. I'm not trying to be too New York Rick hipster here and go with something nobody has ever heard of here. These are two people everyone is familiar with. It's probably Ultimate Warrior's best match of his career. So there you go. 1991.
Wow. Okay. Can I give you one?
The most random pick on my behalf.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. Hey, that's a good one. I'll give you the WrestleMania 4 Battle Royal when I thought Bret Hart won and then Bad News Brown screwed him, right? Remember that?
Yes.
Am I right? Was it WrestleMania 4?
Yep. This was where Bad News Brown hit him with his ghetto blaster.
The ghetto blaster. That's right. I probably shouldn't have given away the result, but whatever. Also, underrated MMA match or fight, if we're talking about the real stuff, WEC 40, Miguel Torres, Takeya Mizugaki. For the longest time, the best fight that I ever saw live, one of the first fights that I ever got to cover in person in Chicago at the UIC Pavilion in Chicago, Illinois. That was a tremendous fight. I suggest checking that out. And by the way, did you mention UFC 35? Because that card was decimated by flu-like symptoms experienced by a bunch of the fighters, because that happened. Did you know that?
That's exactly why I chose it, Ariel. Yes.
No, but did you know that a bunch of the fighters got sick because of the flu on that card? And No. You just mentioned that? That's kind of eerie.
No, I don't have any recollection of that, to be honest.
Well, look it up. It's a fact, brother. All right. And without further ado, I think we are good. So, T,
TST, I hope you're writing down those suggestions because people are liking them. A lot of people have been asking me for more, but I can't just give you all of them because then I'm going to run out of things to suggest in a week. So we're out of time. Thank you very much to Mr. Pollock. Again, check out postwrestling.com. One of these days, TST is going to figure out in this new normal how to actually play the outro music. We're now 0 for 2. Kind of screwed me up there as I was giving the plug for the website, for God's sakes. Postwrestling.com, P-O-S-T-wrestling.com. Not only do they cover professional wrestling incredibly well, but also a lot of MMA as well. And check out the podcast with Jeff Merrick that just dropped and all their podcasts. They do a great job. A lot of my friends write to me about, I mean, Murundi is just going to be thrilled that we had this 1 hour pod. And by the way, another WrestleMania airing on ESPN this Sunday. So in case you're wondering why the heck we spent so much time talking about wrestling, it's because we're in the wrestling business now, all right? John, thank you very much. My best to you and your family. Stay safe and keep pumping out, all that great content. It is much appreciated. It's a great escape. Everyone likes it so much. So keep doing your thing to you and the team.
Guys, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, there he is. John Pollock, Joe Poe, as I like to call him. Appreciate everyone who continues to listen, download, rate, subscribe, review, all that stuff and more. We love you. We appreciate you. Continue to be safe, healthy, positive, sane. We're going to get through this, my friends. We are going to get through this. Thank you, TST, for all the magic in the back. Appreciate you guys. I'll talk to you soon. Be well.